Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The War Room, the episode series brought to you as part of the Clone Star Pod. I am your host, Mike Overton, and joining me in the co-host seat this week is the wonderful Sho Hurley. Sho, how are you?
Mike, brilliant intro so far. I'm very proud of how well this is coming across.
And we're going to do it again now because you ruined it.
No way. We're keeping going. No way. No, we're going. This is staying in like 100%.
Okay, fine. So our guest this week is an actor who has appeared on the long-running Canadian show Heartland, as well as The Spencer Sisters, which has Star Trek director Lee Thompson, and has also provided her voice in the recent Avatar Frontiers of Pandora video game. But we know her as Ensign Christina in Star Trek Strange New World. Our guest this week is Jennifer Hoy. How are you?
I'm great. Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being on the show. It's lovely to have you. So let's start at the very beginning. What got you into acting?
Acting, you know what? I'm still trying to figure out what happened because acting was something that was never planned. I will always be a musician. That was my life's, I feel like, purpose. Went to music school and then I dropped out, which we can totally get into later. But after I dropped out, I was a bit directionless for a bit. And then I had this weird inkling in my mind to try it. And film specifically, not theater. I've never done any kind of stage work.
Right.
And then I Googled my way in. As weird as that sounds. So I had no friends. I had no one I knew in the business. I didn't know anybody to talk to. And Google was my best friend. So I would type in things like how to do a good headshot, who to ask for help to get an agent, or what classes should I take. I Googled my way in. Well, it's the weirdest, most bizarre thing. But
well, they always say, don't they, fake it till you make it. So why not Google it till you make it? I think that's great.
Exactly. So that was kind of my starting. And that was, and I've just been very lucky to meet certain people, meeting the right people along the way to have helped.
I'm just conscious of the fact that I've completely wasted my life, that if I just used Google more accurately, I could actually be an actor as well. So in the family, there was music in the family growing up, Jennifer, or no, not at all?
No, not really. It's interesting. I just found, so my great grandmother had just passed last year, and only then did I find out that my great grandpa's brother, so my great uncle, was an artist. And so that was the only artist I've ever known in my family. My dad he just retired, but he was an engineer, a technician, right. He fixed airplanes. And my mom always stayed at home after we immigrated. And so it was kind of like, no music, no art, nothing. And I don't know what happened to me.
was there any kind of big bang of a kind of situation where you're there going, oh my God, music, yes, I'm completely into it? Or do you just remember always liking music?
Yeah, I've always loved music. It's one of those feelings where, when you watch somebody do something and they're so passionate about it, that kind of feeling I can't replicate with music. Acting might be the closest other thing, but I just remember being a kid and watching people perform music and jamming together and the joy that comes from that. It's kind of like the movie Soul.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, yes.
So good. Like the flow state depicted in that movie is like the love I have for music. And I just remember being a kid and watching it and knowing that this is what I want to do. Like, I want to experience that kind of joy. And my dad was a huge music fan, and so classic rock was what I kind of grew up on, and that's the stuff that I love. So I
Funny that, isn't
started.
it? How you always seem to fall in love with what your parents listen to.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's interesting how it worked out. I think like there's a lot of things that my dad will, he used to blast like his record player to wake us up. So it's a kind of amazing that I didn't hate music.
Well, hang on a
Yeah.
second. What did he use? What kind of music did he blare out to you? Do you remember any specific songs?
Oh yeah, like he was a big like he loved the Beatles, he loved Zeppelin, he loved like the band ABBA. Like it just ranged. It was a huge range of like oldies, like 60s, 70s kind of stuff. But yeah, like anything Pink Floyd, like Dylan, Joni Mitchell, all of that good
Now,
stuff.
you said on Instagram as well, you describe yourself as a driving crooner. So I'm curious about now is
Oh
when you're
no.
driving and you're screaming a song as loud as you can, what song is it? I have to understand what this is because you've just given me a really interesting kind of plethora of kind of songs you grew up with. So what is your song that you have to roar and scream when you're driving a car?
Okay, all right. So there's two answers to this question because the first answer is, as you can tell, I'm a quite introverted person. I've never been a social media, I don't know. A, I'm just not good at it. I'm sure Mike, you understood up until
Nope.
last year.
100%. Absolutely
And now
100%.
you're an influencer.
Yeah.
But
Which is a
it
weird feeling. I'm going to tell you that. It is the weirdest feeling.
it's I think it's a very incredible skill to be able to connect with people all over the world. Like you guys connected that way, right? So it's fascinating to me, but I don't know what it is. I've never been good at it. I do like keeping my circle small, and so I've always just never figured it out. So my bio, a driving crooner, it's a sketch from a Tim Robinson comedy.
Ah.
Tim Robinson is do you guys have you seen I Think You Should Leave?
No, but it's
No.
on my list. I wanted to watch it.
You would love it. I think it's just the most absurd. It's my type of humor. And I'm just not going to say any more because I feel like I want you guys to watch it. It's very absurd stuff. He's a very talented comedic actor, comedian on SNL, and then he created a bunch of sketches that were SNL reject sketches.
Yeah.
And so they're all on Netflix now, and
Yeah.
Driving Crooner is one of them, and it's very ridiculous. But to answer your question, I do have a playlist of all the songs that I like to kind of belt in my car, and it's anything from like "Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You" from Zeppelin to Celine Dion to Whitney Houston, "Let It Go" from Frozen. That's a new addition. It's like, you know when people are like, you should never shuffle all your
Yep.
music library. That's kind of the vibe. It's just, it's anything that I feel like I can practice as I'm commuting.
Oh my word, Jennifer, you have to share that playlist with us. We need to be able to actually listen to this at some point. This is going to be glorious to
I'll tell you
listen
what then, I'm just going to throw
to.
this out. Show, what is the song that you have to belt out to when you're driving in the car?
Oh, I'll tell you a story about that. I was driving to Dublin a few years ago with a friend of mine, and Cher's "Believe" from '99
Solid.
was playing on the radio. See, me and my friend William started singing it as loud as we could, and then I noticed there was a car with two girls overtaking us, and they were clearly listening to the same radio station because I could see they were singing it. And then they looked over to see two 30-year-old men roaring out Cher's "Believe" in the car. So that is a song I 100% will shout out as loud as I can. Do you believe in something? I can't remember Whitney Houston as I sang it.
Man, shares for everyone.
Oh yeah, love a bit of Cher.
Yep.
I have to say though, the Adam Lambert cover of "Believe" is probably the best cover of
Take
that
that
song.
back. Take that back
No.
right now. This interview's
Adam
over.
Lambert's fantastic.
Yep.
I saw him live with Queen. Oh
It's
my
on
did
my
you? Oh
list
my
of I
word.
want if he ever comes back to the UK, it's on my list. I
Yeah.
was very fortunate. I met Brian May a couple of years ago at the pub.
Whoa, at the pub?
Yeah, so
See,
I used to do marketing for his local pub.
What?
And he also has a wildlife charity in the village as well. So I know a
That's
couple of the people that work with him with that. So yeah, it's always a good laugh. So yeah, I've got a couple of
See,
photos of me in the pub and a beer with him.
I don't think I've ever seen a more jealous face in my entire life than Jennifer's face right now, directed at
Oh.
you, going, "Damn you, Mike."
Well,
We could talk about music forever.
I
Listen.
literally live two villages over from Brian May. He lives in
Wow.
Windlesham, which is just what, it's a 10-minute drive from me.
Jennifer is currently looking at flights right now to go to London, and Mike is going to call over to Mike. Let's take a random road trip to, I don't know, Windershere or whatever you call it.
Windlesham, and I tell you what, I'll even point out which house it
That's so cool. I feel like that's the thing about, Europe. I feel like a lot of the classic rock stuff is like it's British
Yeah, it's
music.
Quo, it's Dire Straits, the Beatles,
Yeah.
they're
It's the
Queen,
best.
obviously.
Yeah, it's the best. So it's just that is the coolest thing that you're there.
And Jennifer, so you play the piano.
Yes.
Do you enjoy playing it? And kind of what are some of the bits of music that you enjoy playing most?
Yeah, so piano, I actually started when I
If you
was like.
tell me you Googled how to play the piano and that's how you learned the piano, I'm actually going to leave the room straight away.
Imagine. No, that's one thing I feel like is so hard to replicate for Zoom. Like after COVID, I think a lot of musicians were kind of figuring out, like, how do we play with each other? I don't know if there's any program that can take away that lag and, give that real feeling of playing in person. But anyways, piano. So I was classically trained. I actually wanted to be a concert pianist for a long time. I went to like an arts high school and focused on piano there. But then piano's really lonely. It's a really lonely instrument. So you're kind of in the practice room for hours on end, and you rarely play with the orchestra. It's kind of like it's a piano concerto, so you're featured in it, but you don't have orchestra rehearsals, just like, excuse me, all the other instruments do. So that was kind of when I transitioned to voice. I started taking singing lessons at like 14. So again, I've been late in the game for everything that I'm doing. Singing, I started so much later, and but I was so obsessed with it. I became a very like I wouldn't, go out with friends. I would just practice all the time, just very, very obsessive. And then I had a Led Zeppelin cover band in high school.
Oh my God, this is glorious.
I know, it was wild. And I had no idea what I was doing with my voice. And then I got a voice teacher and she ended up being an opera singer.
Wow.
And so that was kind of my trajectory. She was very traditional. And she would always say, you have to learn how to sing classical before you sing anything else. And that's not true, by the way, but I believed it. And then,
Did Google tell you that's not real, Jennifer?
well, I think
Tell
I
me
just,
the
Google, I feel like, so I'm 28 now. So I was definitely like the cusp of technology. When I was in high school, Google was good, but it wasn't like the way it was now. And so I definitely kind of witnessed that go. But I didn't trust Google until I was probably in my mid-20s.
I still don't trust Google.
Actually, Jennifer, you've done it in the episode. Every single episode we do, there's a moment where we're reminded how horribly old we actually are, and you've
Yeah.
done it there by saying you're 28. I'm 41, so now I'm reminded of the fact that I'm an old fogey in comparison to you.
Oh,
And I can't reveal Mike's age because he's too pretty. Also,
thanks. Well, I'll be
so
33 this year. I'll be
Oh,
th actually, I'll be th
belated
I'll be
birthday.
33 in 3.5 weeks. There you go.
Oh, Jennifer, we didn't tell you at the start of the interview that unfortunately at the end our guests have to sing a song. So I hope you still remember those Led Zeppelin covers that you did all those years ago.
Or
Yeah,
Frozen, one of the two.
You don't want to hear them. But those were like little Jen at 16 thinking she could sing Robert Plant. Like
Oh, can't wait to hear that. That's the perfect way to end the episode. Like, it'd be great.
was funny.
So, Jennifer, you fell out of love with music for a while. Why was it, and what kind of brought you back to it?
Yeah, so there was a mixture of things. So I studied at a conservatory called the Boston Conservatory. It was, I think, my first time being away from home, being in the States instead of Canada. And I was there at a time when Trump was elected, and it was a very hard time as like a small Asian girl. And it just was a very racist and sexist city at the time. And there were a lot of like traumatic events, I would say, that kind of happened to me while I was in school there. And I think I must have linked it with music. But the other thing was I was so heavily focused in the classical world in opera that I lost my ability to sing Led Zeppelin and stuff like that. So finding that my own voice again was really, really hard. And I think a lot of that kind of triggered a lot of mental health stuff for me. And so I kind of fell out of love for it because I was just really heartbroken, I think, just by the industry and by the people. And coming home was definitely, it definitely helped. And ever since then, I'd been working to get it back. And writing a lot helps. So I'm writing my own music now, which is really therapeutic. And just finding the balance of everything.
So one of the next bits of music you're going to compose is the Ballad of Mike and Show, yes?
Hell yeah.
That sounds like a Klingon war
That's what
song.
we
I'm
want.
sorry.
Yes, I'm
Featuring
all
Mike
up.
Show. Let's
So
go. Yeah.
it's a Klingon opera, yeah?
The first, would it be the first ever? You guys would know.
So is there an instrument that you wish you'd learned to play other than piano?
Oh yeah, so I also play guitar.
Okay.
Wish I was better at it, but an instrument that I absolutely love that I can't play at all is bass guitar,
Okay.
like slap bass or like a cello. I love the cello. That
See, I
shit
play
sounds
I
so
yeah,
good.
I play piano and I play drums, but
Oh, cool.
I always wanted to learn violin.
Yeah, what it's, I mean, it's never too late.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's way too late.
Aww. Your
It's way
partner's
too late.
like,
And if we've learned anything, Mike, if we've learned anything from this conversation, Google as your friend in order to pick up those lessons and how to play the
it.
cello.
I don't
Google
think I want to put my partner or my neighbors through that.
Exactly. Your partner's just like, first he was yelling, and now there's a
Now
violin
he's
going
screeching and killing cats with the violin. Yeah.
Joe's gonna get a call being like, what did you do to Mike?
Oh, that's funny. Show your videos frozen.
Oh, you are.
Yeah, and it's the weirdest face, and I've screenshotted it. Anyway, we'll just continue on until show's connection resumes.
Sounds
Oh,
great. Oh, there
you
you are.
back?
Yeah.
Am I back?
Yeah, you're
Am I
back.
back? Am I back?
Yeah.
Am I back? Yes. Okay, Grant. That was really weird. Okay, Jen, you're proud of your heritage, from from where your parents are from, things like that. Have you tried to bring that into, say, the music that you kind of look to compose and things like that in terms of what you've written? Do you kind of like to make it more contemporary, or do you try and tie it into, say, where your family is from?
Yeah, I love that question. So, yes, I'm working on an EP right now, and a few of the songs are, they're not necessarily, I guess, tied to traditional elements of any kind of Chinese musical things, but I love my parents, and I'm so inspired by truly any immigrant story. It doesn't have to just be Chinese, but It really blows my mind how someone could go to, honestly, a completely different world, as it seems, not speak the language, not know the culture, and still make a life there. So I have a few songs on my upcoming EP that reflect my parents' story, the difficulties of understanding or understanding how to be in two different cultures. That's also something that I'm, have always kind of struggled with, and which one is your identity? So yeah, I like more of a storytelling aspect of music, and I think that's why I was so drawn to film. But yeah, any kind of like, I really love like Joni Mitchell's type of storytelling, or obviously there's Bob Dylan, but that's very similar to my original stuff at the moment.
And when is your EP coming out?
I don't know. I don't know. I've been working on it on and off in between projects for a bit, but I haven't set a date yet. So
Are you
follow
self-publishing?
my
Or are you going through a label or?
no, I'm self-publishing at the moment. And I'm also trying to learn how to produce a little bit better. I've always been like a live musician, so learning production was a bit of like my quarantine project, I guess. So I have a bit of like a home studio setup. I have some producer friends that kind of help me.
So, what were some of your first acting roles?
Okay, so my first I did with the help of Google. No, I think it was Facebook. I still had Facebook at
Oh God, this is getting worse. Next year's gonna be MySpace taught me no.
You guys, I this is why the imposter syndrome is so real for me. Like, I'm just like, what was my start? Like, I'm constantly surrounded by people who went to theater school and they're like Shakespeare actors, and I'm just like, I don't know what I'm doing. But okay, so I did some like student films. I did some non-union commercials, I believe, through Facebook groups. Not a very glamorous answer, but I'm gonna be honest. That's how it happened. So
Jennifer, just remember, like you're saying it's not a glamorous answer. Like there's only one person here who's actually been on the TV screen and the movie screen. It's not it's and it's not
Oh
Mike
yeah.
and it's not me. Like
No.
so it's...
We've been on the phone screen, you've been on the big screen. There you go.
Well, that's I guess kind of the answer. But I would say those are, and those things are sh were shown like internally. So it's not even something you can kind of look up. It's, students' projects and little commercials or corporate ads or stuff like that. But then, yeah, and then I started working, getting other roles in network television or indie films and stuff like that. And
But you're making that kind of sound like it's the easiest thing in the whole wide world. Like, how did you get into some of the TV shows and like the in the, even the indie films? Don't tell me you did it through Google or Facebook again, or I'm gonna turn off my camera and walk away.
at this point, I've programmed an AI to be my agent. No, that's not.
Please tell me you own the domain name hoi.ai.
That would be great. That would be great. And it's just reruns of Tim Robinson sketches. No, I was very fortunate to have found the team that I have right now. And how it really works is you kind of keep your training up. So I train with coaches and I go to class to keep learning. But then my team will send me auditions. So everything that I've ever worked on, I auditioned for. Yeah, and so it's that's the kind of dynamic it works, I guess. There's not that much mystery there as it, I think, gets perceived in the media. But yeah, once a show is filming in your city or not, they release breakdowns to management teams, agencies, stuff like that. And then your team will submit you. And then if you get an audition, you audition. And then the rest is kind of
You either
history.
get it or you don't.
Exactly. You either get it and you hear about it, or you don't, and they ghost you. Like, it's when people say,
Like
yeah,
applying for
when
jobs.
honestly, yeah, kind of. But I feel like in other industries, you at least get a, I'm so sorry, like, blah, blah, blah. You get a kind of email or something. But for us, we don't hear no's. We just,
Right.
it's
Just
silent.
nothing.
It's just nothing until you like go to the theater and you're like, oh, I went out
Oh.
for that. Like 2 years later, because you got to film it and you have another year for post.
Post.
And so you're just like, what happened to that role? Oh, it's right there. I'm watching
Someone
here.
else got it. There we go.
Exactly.
Actually, Jennifer, I have to ask you the Adam Driver question, which I should have instigated into the podcast a while back. Can you watch yourself back in TV or movies or whatever, or do you find it really hard?
I think it depends on the project. There was, oh, there was an actor's interview I recently watched. Oh my goodness, who was it? I think it was Pedro Pascal, but he was talking about how he can't watch Last of Us.
Right.
And that's because he just had such a, the making of it was so special. That he doesn't want to have any kind of change to that experience. And for me, that's the same thing. So if the making of the certain project was just so incredible, and I don't want the editing room or anything else to change my perception of what that memory was, because we don't usually watch the project. Or we don't really hear about it until a year at least, when it, gets released. And so you have this really nice memory of things, and then sometimes it's not the take you wanted. It's not, the performance that you wanted. It's not edited in a way where you imagined. And so that sometimes that can skew your, I guess, memory of it. And that's how I kind of feel as well. But I Being classically trained in music, I have a pretty tough skin, I'd say, and I like to watch myself so I can see what I can do to improve. Because not everything is just based on feeling. I think there's a lot of technical aspects of film as well that I would like to be better in, and watching yourself's the only way to do that. So
And in terms of, say, like music, obviously is one part of it, and you're kind of doing the acting, you've done voice acting and all that. Would you ever see yourself looking to, say, direct at some point as well?
I think maybe when I have much more experience in the industry, but I wouldn't say I have so much respect for directors and what they do. I don't know if I have the eye for it just yet, but I would love to be that person on set one day to be able to kind of lead. And just to make my own projects kind of come alive, one day. You can hit me up in like 30 years.
We will hold you to that. I will set a calendar reminder now for 2050 something.
That's right. Yeah.
So what do you think you've learned along the way? So thinking back to where you started and where you are now, what do you think you've learned?
Oh my goodness, tons. Just being on set, nothing replicates being on set, which is such a catch 22 because all actors want to do is work to get experience, and no amount of class could show you what that's like. But I think the most valuable things I've learned is to Is that this is a it's a team effort. Everything on set is it's all a dance. It's all like a puzzle. And everyone needs to be on the same page in order for things to really go smoothly. Yeah, I would say that that is the most important thing, and remembering to not lose your own work and your own prep as a character, just because things are going off on set. That's something I think has been a few hard lessons where, you know, if you're on a set and people are being negative, like, how do you still maintain your work for your character and not give up what you've prepped for the character just because sometimes people are bashing the project you're in right beside you, right before you have to start a scene? Like, how do you do that? And so those things are. Those were hard lessons for me.
So let's touch on some of your voiceover work, because you've done two, three projects.
I've done two video games and one cartoon.
Which do you prefer, video game or cartoon?
They're so different. I love both. I truly like, I used to be a bit of a gamer. I have a brother growing up, one older brother, and so that was, I just, you know, I love everything about a video game, and I love the puzzle pieces that.
Sorry, Jennifer, just to interrupt for a second. I have to age this podcast again.
Okay,
What console did you grow up playing?
so I was more of like a PC gamer.
Oh, thank God. Okay, that's fine.
Is that okay?
That's fine, because like I grew up playing the Commodore 64, which I'm pretty sure
Okay.
most of the audience have never even heard of. So
I had
that's
a
fine.
PlayStation 1 followed by a PlayStation 2.
Yes, I we had a PS2 as well. I think that was our first like non-PC console. We had a
God.
PS1 was like we had that,
It's the one with the
but
black discs.
yeah, we had like the gray PS1. But that one was like an extended family in Hong Kong, and we would just yearly go to them because my mom didn't let us really have video games until we got older. So yeah, anyways, that was kind of like my childhood, I guess, with my brother. Yeah, I don't know what I would prefer. I love cartoons. I love the world of cartoons and being able to morph into different sounds and sing as like a animal. Like that is a dream. I love both.
And you were saying when you did For Honor, you were able to embrace some of your kind of heritage as well, kind of with that.
Yeah, that was really cool. That was my first ever video game, and they just really, you know, brought me through it. But my character speaks Cantonese as well as English in the game. And so it was really cool doing all the little like video game, like the grunts. We call them Onos and stuff. And so like it's like when your character, oh, your character gets hit and you have to make that sound, or character jumps from tall building versus short building. This is a gash instead of an arrow shot or whatever. And so all those things, but on top of that, we had barks is what we call them. Like if you're a soldier, you're like, everyone get down. That would be a bark that you'd have to record. But I had barks in Cantonese. And that was just so, yeah, it was so special. And so that was a really, really cool project.
Are you still fluent in Cantonese?
So I'm born in Canada. I don't read or write Chinese, unfortunately, but I'm fluent in Cantonese.
It's better than me. I mean, no.
You said my last name pretty damn well. So you got that going for you.
That's that is the extent of my Chinese, unfortunately.
Do you speak, either of you speak other languages?
I speak okay French.
Okay.
I speak some Polish, some Czech, a little bit of Spanish.
That's a lot.
It's just from working with people over the years. So I used to, for a little while, I used to run pubs and restaurants. So, and I always thought it was a nice thing to welcome somebody to work or say goodnight in their native language. So I always learned, hello, how are you? How was your weekend? You know, the basics. So I learned them for Spanish, Czech, Polish, and then I did French in school. So, but I haven't spoken French for 15 years.
I can still direct somebody to the train station in German if that's of any use after learning German for 10 years. But also my mother was an Irish teacher, so I was always really good at Irish. Now the standard has completely fallen off a cliff, but if I got speaking to someone, it would slowly but surely start to come back. So we were supposed to be interviewing somebody from Ireland for the podcast, and I was trying to teach Mike an Irish phrase. Now he got your surname right, Jennifer, after like one or two goes. If you heard the voice notes where he was attempting to say a very simple sentence in Irish, I kept listening back to it going, oh dear God, what is he trying to do
Hang
here?
on. It is a very simple sentence. It's
I
not
hear
written in any way, shape, or form, or said.
her.
It's like Welsh. You know, they put Y's next to U's and Z's. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Well, can I hear some, Mike, right now? Do you still remember?
I can't remember a word of it.
Oh.
What was the say? Oh yeah, it was I think I was that's it. I was getting Mike to say thank you in Irish.
No,
And
it was more than thank you.
it was. So it's ba so basically thank you in Irish is gurav mahagut.
Oh.
Yeah, so gurav mahagut. So it's actually go rev ma a gut. So there's four words there. So GORAIBH, because there's no V in the Irish language. Rev ma, so MAITH, and then a gut, AGAT, but it sounds like AGUT, to be honest with you. So it's go rev, like you rev your engine in your car. So go rev ma, like MAH, and then a gut, AGUT, almost. So there you go. So Jennifer, after that very quick explanation, I'm going to say it one more time. You've got to repeat it, right? So you're like, this is all staying in the interview, I might add as well. Okay, right. So go rev ma a gut.
Go rev mahgut. Good.
Yes, say it now, say it again and just say it a bit faster.
Go rev mahgut.
Listen to that, Mike. Do you see that now? That's a practice actor from YouTube right there. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Mike, I'm
Ask
replacing you
Google
as
for
co
you.
I'm replacing you as co-host, Mike.
Okay.
Jennifer is taking over.
Oh no. Well, I can't do his designs, so we're gonna get stick drawings of the Enterprise and just.
So, Jennifer, tell us about your dog, Thunder.
My dog, he is an 80-pound hurricane. He's actually at my parents' right now, so he wasn't gonna disrupt this.
Oh no, that's what I was hoping for.
I know, but he's I adopted him from Thunder Bay, which is 15 hours northeast of Toronto. And yeah, he's like a Rottweiler, German Shepherd mix mutt. He's the best. He's my life. And yeah, like we go camping together, we go hiking together. He's a dog dog. So he loves everybody. He loves outdoors. He loves sticks. You know, the huge.
And I'm not a dog person, unfortunately, but
You're not.
Mike,
I've seen the
what?
photos on Instagram and he does look lovely, but I'm a cat person, unfortunately.
I like cats too, but dogs are better. But
Jennifer,
I had a dog growing up, but.
what is your love for everything everywhere all at once?
Oh my gosh, you guys. That film is. Well, firstly, I already love the Daniels because the Swiss Army Man was like a ridiculous, brilliant movie. Have you got either of you seen it?
No, I've heard of it though. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's with Daniel Radcliffe and Paul Dano. Oh my goodness, it's a wild film. So I was already fans of them. I love the idea of not understanding how to love somebody, but still doing it anyways. And it's such a universal, beautiful message. and traveling through different universes, worlds, in order to understand somebody because your love for them is that big. And that's just, yeah, it could be a partner, it could be your child, it could be, you know, your sibling. It's just this idea of how powerful love could be. And then made in the zaniest, like, the Daniels way as possible. And then you just, like, plop in an Asian family. That is, it just, like, pulls my heartstrings, you know?
I have to say, though, throwing an Asian family with Michelle Yeoh in it.
Oh, my God. And then it's just... Of course, the absolute queen, my queen. Well, just, yeah.
What was your favorite scene in the movie?
I have many favorite scenes. The fight with, like, the dildos was pretty nuts. I love that scene. That was so cool.
How was your interview today? It was wonderful. We talked about dildo fights.
I know.
I thought the scene with the rocks when they turned into rocks in that, and I thought that was one of the most creative things I've ever seen in my entire life. It was brilliant, and it was totally silent as well, and you're just reading what was going on as everyone. This is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it was, you know, and that's what I'm drawn to. I love the gray type of themes, in the sense that it's not just one genre, it's not just one emotion. There's always constantly other things going, and that's just more lifelike anyways. But yeah, the scene of, like, the last, that little fight at the end with Stephanie Hsu, like, with the daughter and the mom, like, that brings me to tears. The montage of the dad and the mom, like, Huey Quan with, like, their different alternate lives but still choosing to be together, like, that, it's just, yeah, it made me laugh and cry, and just, there was action, there was comedy, like, it was just the perfect film.
It's definitely going to be on my list to buy later.
You haven't watched it yet?
No, I haven't seen it. It's been on my list for a while. Just, do you know what? I have got so much TV and film to watch. I'm just struggling to find time at the moment. I mean, I still haven't seen Barbie.
You know what? Like, here's a very unpopular opinion. It's a big pet peeve of mine when people kind of give you shit for, like, not seeing something or not having heard a band.
And
like, there's so much out there.
Yeah.
And it's like, what's the point of, you know, whatever, but it's totally fine. You haven't seen it. There's a lot going on with the streaming services and stuff too. Like,
it's not just that. I mean, we're now in 2024, and the majority of the shows that I normally watch are just about to start airing again. And it's just like,
what are some of the list? I'd love to know.
I love Blue Bloods, The Rookie, SWAT. Those are my three top US shows that I watch religiously. I've watched Blue Bloods from day one, so nearly 15 years ago. Love that show. Superman and Lois is on my list at the moment because I have about halfway through season two of that. For All Mankind, The Orville, anything Star Trek related, obviously.
We finished watching Fool Me Once last night. It's on Netflix. So it's a British author, I think. He's written a couple of books.
Yep.
Now, it was a lot of kind of publicity about it. I found it utterly boring, so I kind of wanted to finish as quickly as possible. I've been watching Reacher, which I was very surprised is actually very, very good. I enjoyed the first season of an episode of the second season. I started watching a show last night that you won't have seen, Jennifer. Mike, you might have. Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, it's called. It's about a real life case over in England about issues with the postal service and basically how it destroyed people's lives. It's brilliant. There's only four episodes, and we're hopefully starting True Detective Night Country hopefully this week or next week, because first season was brilliant, second season was terrible, third season was a bit better, but I forgot to watch the last episode, which probably wasn't the smartest thing to do.
It was that good you forgot to watch it. Yep.
And I have to kind of watch that. See, we gravitate towards, like, shorter kind of, like, one-off things, like, say, for instance, Mayor of Easttown with Kate Winslet, which it was absolutely brilliant, and, like, those kind of things. We kind of like watching one and done, and that's it. You're kind of in, you're out.
Yeah, I hear you. It's I love that, and I feel like that's a lot of, like, the British stuff too. It's a lot of miniseries. It's a lot of that type of of content.
You weren't just, you didn't just call me British there, did you, by any chance, Jennifer?
No.
To be honest with you,
I know my line.
To be fair,
there's a lot of British television.
Yeah. Oh no, the camera is turning off as we speak.
Don't you?
To be fair, I watch near enough zero British television.
Really?
Philistine. Actually, Jennifer, have you ever seen Blackadder?
No.
So I got Rowan Atkinson in it.
Mr. Bean, yeah. So, like, if you've never seen Blackadder, you can skip the first season. But like, the second and third, you'd enjoy because it is completely madcap. And I know you like, you know, kind of the stuff that you enjoy. But like that now is it's very off the wall. Absolutely great. It's like it's hilarious. Like he's just such an awful human being, Edmund Blackadder, and like each season is set in a different period in history.
Yeah.
And like, say the fourth season is set during the Second World War. Like there's other ones set in like the Elizabethan era and things like that. Like, so he's a prince, then he was a prince again, then he was a butler, and then he's just a captain in the military. And they're just, there's only six episodes each, that's all. But it's absolutely brilliant. So if you get a chance, seek it out and find it. It is absolutely, it's brilliant. It's pure British kind of wonderful humor, like where the joke is built up slowly over a period of time. Hugh Laurie now and Stephen Fry are also in it.
Oh, beautiful. Love Stephen Fry.
The other one is Fawlty Towers. I love Fawlty Towers.
Yeah. Okay.
Have you never seen or heard of Fawlty Towers?
No.
It's got John Cleese in it.
Mike, just remember, Jennifer's 28 years old, right? Like, I'm 41 years old, right? So there's a big kind of difference. Yeah, Jennifer's not going to see these things.
Yes. I suppose it was different for me because it was always on telly at some point or other. So I sort of watched bits and bobs of it. But yeah, that show is brilliant. But again, the downside is it hasn't aged well.
Oh, God, no. No.
It's been very... in the 70s, and it looks like... It's like the original series. You can tell it was made in the 70s.
Yes, right. Okay. No, I'll definitely check it out. I love it.
I'll send you on a list of recommendations, Jennifer, altogether on Instagram later on, just so you can have all the recommendations we have for you.
So while we're on the subject of television, did you watch Star Trek growing up?
I did not. So my dad, my mom were, I've canceled myself multiple times.
Oh, don't worry about
in
it.
This podcast.
I think when Mike edits the interview, it's going to be like, Mike will introduce you and then the episode ends and that'll be
this. This week,
join us next week.
Bye.
No, I did not, unfortunately.
Don't worry, we're not holding that against you, Jennifer. We're only joking with that.
So have you watched any since?
Yes, of course I have. So when I got the audition, I gave my friend Patrick a call. He's a big Trekkie. He's watched all of them, all the movies. And so I was like, help me. I don't know what any of this means. And I have like 24 hours to do it. So since then I've and preparing for this role, because knowing that it was so closely tied to the original series, so I went through that, and I think I've also watched a few of the movies, but I did not watch it growing up.
We had Rong Fu on the show last week, and she was saying to us when she was doing her audition, which was over Zoom, she said that some of the trickier parts of the dialogue she actually had written down and sellotaped to the side of her computer so she couldn't read it out because she couldn't remember.
Brilliant.
So I'm wondering, did you have something similar when you were doing your audition?
No, you know what? I think personally, I didn't really have any jargon. No, I had a little bit, but I didn't. If I ever tape anything around my screen, it's so distracting for me. I can't pull it off. Like they'll be like, she's reading. Like I probably don't have the skills that Rong Fu did.
To be fair, I'm the same. If you give me something, If I'm reading something, like notes, you can tell I'm reading. Yep.
You'd be like this kind of look. What's
wrong? Yeah.
Can't read my own handwriting.
What? Yes.
Anyway,
so I was going to say, so how did the role on Star Trek Strange New Worlds come about?
Yeah, so it came about like any other audition. I had a very small window to get ready for it. And it also was a Zoom audition. And there were two scenes. The first scene was the interrogation scene with Lon and Number One. And then the other scene, I actually think it might have been like a dummy side, which is sometimes for shows that the NDAs are quite intense.
Yeah.
They'll rewrite scenes that are similar to other scenes so that just for auditions, so that it never gets leaked. But yeah, so that scene, it was never in the script. But it was a scene where, after the interrogation, and Ensign Christina and Ensign Zier were like sentenced to cleaning transporter pads, and it was a scene with Chief Kyle, and it was us scrubbing the pads, and then we were teaching Number One and Lon what fun meant.
I can imagine that being alongside Enterprise Bingo.
exactly. And so we were cleaning them, and then they come up to us and they're just like, what did you mean, what this was fun, like what is that word? And so we're just like, what? And so that was it was a really funny scene actually that they wrote. But those were the two scenes, and then that was kind of that.
So what are some of your highlights of working on Star Trek, both in front and behind the screen?
Oh man. This,
what are some of your favorite moments anyway?
Yeah, I have so many. This job was just the gift that keeps on giving. The fact that you guys contacted me out of nowhere and years later that it's been an incredible universe to be a part of, if not like the best. Star Trek fans and this world is like the kindest, most passionate people I've ever met. And it's been such a privilege, really, an honor to be like welcomed. It was like I teared up after getting all these, you know, messages where they're just like, welcome to the family. And I was like, what? Me? Like, for real? It's like, this is the coolest. It was the coolest thing, the coolest experience.
So were you surprised when you got the request from us for you to come on and have a chat with us?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I'm always surprised, I think. but yeah, every time anyone reaches out and they're like, oh, we'd love to hear about your experience, or I had trading cards and stuff to sign. I was like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing ever. Anyways, so I would say that the Star Trek universe, like, this is one of the highlights of my career so far. Like, it's incredible.
What's the atmosphere like on set when you're there on the days you're filming? Like, is it kind of relaxed? Is it kind of fun? What's it like?
Yeah, well, I was very lucky to have been there for quite a few days to watch everybody work and get to know people as well. I definitely have some pretty hilarious, embarrassing stories from set, but the general atmosphere was very calm. It was very kind. There was this one thing that they would do, I'll never forget. It's called the Appreciation Award. And so every morning after the safety meeting, there would be this little presentation of an appreciation award, and it's purely just for crew. So it would be like, Mike got it yesterday. So Mike would be like, I would like to give this, and it's an actual medal that they made with the Starfleet like logo on it. And it was like, okay, I would like to give it to show today in the art department because yesterday he helped me out in this pinch and blah, 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 blah. Here we go. Congratulations, show. And then everyone, the entire crew and cast would clap.
My
And I'm
word.
like, what set does this? Like, this is not a thing. And so I was like, this is so cool. Like, this is every morning. They weren't, usually sets are like, everyone hurry up. Like, let's don't waste time. But they were so chill. They were so like appreciative of people. And so the whole day, people would just walk by show and be like, hey, congrats, man. Like, you're awesome.
Oh,
And
wow.
everyone just felt appreciated. So that was always the atmosphere. And every single one of the main cast were like incredible, the nicest people I've ever worked with, and such generous actors.
So, who did you spend the most time with then?
I did. I mean, I obviously had like more speaking scenes with Rebecca and Christina, but I was on the bridge like the whole time, so it was always the whole crew minus Bruce, who plays Hemmer, because he was always, downstairs. But yeah, Rebecca and Christina, I'd say were like the most we spent time with.
And what about
But
off camera?
off camera, yeah, it was like the whole bridge crew. The whole bridge crew, we'd always like it was just kind of we have a little section of like chairs where we hang out in between shots and stuff. But yeah, I was very lucky, truthfully. I don't know what I was doing there, but like I was like, I got to watch you guys work. Are you kidding me? Absolute legends were just always on their A game. Yeah, very lucky.
In no way are Mike and myself exceptionally jealous that you just got to sit around the bridge of the Enterprise and, take part in it and all that kind of thing.
I know, and it's that's the cool thing about filming in a studio. Like everything is it's so real. Like my first day, I was like, this is I feel like I'm in I don't know, like you're very immersed in it. And other than like, the giant windshield, like it's obviously just like a hole. Everything else was like you are on a ship. So, yeah, very incredible work people
I've
made.
seen some of the set photos and it's mad. One
Yeah.
day show, one day we'll get
Monday.
Listen,
I'll Google it, Mike. I'll find the answer on Google. It'll tell me what we need to do in this.
Well, I have to say, actually, to be fair, Google can be your friend.
that is the takeaway from this interview, honestly. Like, they didn't pay me, unfortunately. But Google.
Well, to be fair, it was Google. It was through Google I found out that Anson was in London for the premiere.
There you go.
What we normally do as well, Jennifer, is whenever we send out the kind of episode image, we have like a picture of the actor, we have kind of their name, then a description. So we'll put you down as Google brand ambassador when we're actually doing
Ooh, I love that for me.
this. Google technical expert, yeah.
I don't know shit.
Jennifer, would you like to return to the Star Trek universe at some point?
Are you kidding? Yes. Like, I was so heartbroken that I wasn't in season two. Of course I would love to. In any capacity. I love sci-fi. I love action. It's Yeah, everything about that job was just so wonderful, artistically, and just as a working environment, it was wonderful. And it can be hard to say sometimes, especially certain conditions or certain groups of people. You're just like hard to find the groove. But yeah, that was one of the best.
And what do you hope to do next? Obviously, we know directing is definitely in your future anyway. But what else would you like to do? Outside of obviously your EP as well, that's going to be coming out at some point too.
I love, again, I love sci-fi. I love being really immersed in different universe than this. I'm constantly torn because on one hand, I love telling Asian, like Canadian American stories. I think, and that's becoming more and more popular, which is awesome. But on the other hand, I also love the idea of being in like an alternate universe, like sci-fi puts us, where we're all people and, you know, or post-apocalyptic stuff, where your kind of race is not even a question anymore. It's just kind of like we all feel the same way. We're all here dealing with the same thing, whatever it is. And I think that there's a lot of merit in having those types of stories. So I'm very torn. I love so anything from, you know, a very like immigrant story, a very dramatic type of work to sci-fi action. I love all of it.
Well, show, I will let you do the last question this time.
Oh, aren't you so polite, Mike? I love it. Jennifer, this is a question we always ask all of our guests. It's a very easy question. So this shouldn't be too hard for you to answer. What does Star Trek mean to you? I can see Jennifer's looking to the side of her screen. It looks like she's got something written down. She's going to start reading prompts straight away. What's that say there now?
Have my second laptop here ready to Google in case I get stumped, you know?
Putting into Chat GPT, tell me what to say in this situation.
Star Trek, what does it mean to me? Honestly, I just think family. And I mean, I have a few reasons of why, but the power that this world was created, that so many people can relate to, no matter what your background or ethnicity, age, and it's been alive for so many decades. Like, that is so powerful, and it really speaks to human beings of how we function. And just there's so much solidarity in it, and that's why I think family. It's always family. All the love that I've gotten from fans of the show or fans of just the universe is like, it's, you know, I was a recurring character, but you know, I wasn't a lead or anything. There wasn't a pivotal story for my character, not yet. But I was just given the same amount of love. And that is so beautiful to me. Like a two fans from across the world can connect on that. And they've been doing it for decades. So Star Trek is family.
Brilliant. And Mike, I will let you do the outro because this is where you absolutely shine.
Thanks everyone for tuning in to this awesome episode of The War Room. I have been your host, Mike Overton, with the wonderful Joseph Hurley as my co-host. Remember, visit our website, clonestarpod.com, for amazing fan art and blogs written by you, our fans. Until next time, live long and prosper.